Before we get started, I have to do a quick correction. Last week I said Zombie Hunter aired on Halloween. It aired 4 days before Halloween, Kate. I'm sorry for lying to you.
That's a really big oversight.
It is, but not as big as number two. I talked about a cop conference last week.
They're at like some sort of cop conference.
I don't understand how I did not mention Paul Blart 2. Have you ever seen it? It's set at a cop conference.
Always bet on Blart.
You know, I own Paul Blart 1,
yeah,
but not 2.
And Kevin James is your guy, too, so this is a little surprising that you've never seen it.
I know. You know, he was my guy.
He was your guy. Okay, that's fair.
I don't know that he still is.
Now we know who your guy is.
We don't have to bring that up.
Oh, come on! I mean, it's funny because you'll be on mic saying that you think that Gru is sexy, but God forbid the audience knows you're attracted to...
I'm not embarrassed about Gru.
I'm Lester Holt.
We got ourselves a new dateline. It is a shorty. And guess what? It feels like one. Here is the KMDB description. A 41-year-old mother of three is gunned down in her bathroom. But did the husband do it? Survey says, of course he did.
Love it.
Thank you. All right. So this was hosted by Murph Dog. And you know what? If this guy ever listens to our eps, I don't know what it is, but he seems to get ones that I have real hot takes on. And that kind of happened tonight.
Got my attention. Tell me more, huh?
But tell me, what did you think about Ghost Rider, Kate?
This was boring.
Yeah.
Oh, someone's murdered. Did the husband do it? Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
The only thing that sets us apart is that the husband appeared with his family on Family Feud.
Honey, I love you, but said I do.
Which we will discuss, because I got opinions on that little bit. I hope you do.
I have opinions on that too, yes.
Okay. Overall, I liked this app. Now, I feel it is my duty as a co-host of this program to just go ahead and watch all the 48 hours, because they did this too, and they had info that Dateline did not.
Of course.
And now, it's not going to floor you as much as last week's did, but it is good stuff. I will not watch 2020 on the rig. That's not fucking happening.
Thank you.
It's not going to happen, all right?
No.
I slum it, but I don't slum it that hard.
It's nice to have a buddy.
Yeah, it is.
Our story begins in Quincy, Illinois, which Murph Dog calls the home of Mark Twain.
Yes, on the banks of the Mississippi.
Yep. What did you think of Murph Dog and him painting the scene? How'd he do?
Clickety-clack of the bike tires.
Clickety-clack. Oh my God, yes, yes. Oh my God, that
I laughed out loud.
Yep, same here.
The clickety-clack of gears grinding.
And also, my favorite line, again, we find ourselves with the hosts waxing poetic about a bicycle, right? Last week, Cam wouldn't shut up about it either.
Yeah.
She could think on her bike. Prepare.
And then a lot of weird sound effects added to this one. The howling wind, like Quincy, Illinois is the coldest place that's ever existed.
Oh my God, Quincy in February? Do not get caught outside at night. It is cold. My favorite line from Murph Dog was, security cameras, lonely sentinels in the dark of night. Now that is a picture painted right there.
Security cameras, lonely sentinels in the dark of night.
He's such a wordsmith.
He really is. And I'd like to think that he put that in there for me, because a sentinel is the movie that Corey Feldman mentions in The Burbs.
Yeah, that was for you.
Did you ever see the movie The Sentinel, Mr. Peterson?
All right, so it is February 2023, and Becky Bleefnik, divorced, single mother of three, is found dead in her bathroom, shot 14 times. And they said 14 a few times. That was fun.
We later learned she was shot 14 times.
14 times?
It was 14 times.
So Tim Bleefnik is trying to get a hold of his wife, Becky. No answer. So he calls Becky's dad and says, hey, I can't get a hold of Becky. You want to swing over there and see what's going on? And so the dad says, yes, I'm going to check. And then that's when he finds the dead body of his daughter. Massive signs of struggle. Although, I mean, spoiler alert for later in the ep, nobody said it. But there were hella signs of struggin'.
Signs of struggin'.
Yeah. Yeah. So the dad finds his daughter. The cops are hot on the scene. They're ready to investigate. We didn't get any 911 calls for this app.
No, it must not have been compelling enough.
One thing I found out in the 48 hours is that Becky managed to dial 91126, and then she dropped her phone.
Oh, man.
And the phone was knocked out of her hand, and it was found behind the door.
You look at the scene of the crime, like, the intruder got in through an upstairs window and then broke into the bedroom door. And they could tell, like, they were saying she clearly was trying to keep him out of the room.
Right.
And then it ends up in the bathroom. So, like, I just, like, this was long. This wasn't quick, you know?
You know, it was this year, but
yeah.
Those crime scene photos look like they're from the 80s.
Yeah, a little bit. You think that's just the design choice of the Bleefniks, maybe?
Maybe. It's it's the decor in the house, but it also seems like the quality of the photos. Mm-hmm. Like when we see the window frame and how the window was broken into, and then the door frame, it all looks very vintage.
Yeah, it did. It did. So the cops are interviewing the neighbors, and that's when they go over to the Hymans, who, as Murfdock points out, they both have the same name of Taylor.
Yep, they're both named Taylor.
What'd you think of that?
Taylor and Taylor Hyman.
Hyman. Yep.
Yes.
And Murfdock going, yep, both named Taylor. 48 hours, just called them the Hymans.
Becky's next door neighbors, the Hymans.
What do you think? Is that the better move? Do you call out the Taylors? I kind of like it, but it was a little distracting.
You call them the Taylors for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, would you do that? Let's say you're attracted to somebody. You find out they have your name. Do you put a stop to it there? Or do you let it unfold and deal with it if it comes up?
In this hypothetical situation, do I have a different name that could be both male and female?
But it's not like Octavius or something wild. Like it's Joe or Pete or Bill or Chad or Steven.
I'm going to say yes.
You stick with them?
Yes. I think it gets weird when they have the same last name before marriage. And I know a lot of people who have dated people with their same last name.
Are you serious?
I am serious. It is weird.
Boy, what does that do for investigations when they're trying to put a timeline together of like when people were married or whatever?
I guess they gotta go to the paperwork.
Yeah, but then it's not gonna happen. So that's a shame. Let's talk about Becky and Tim. Becky, the victim, I mean, it's easy to call a victim a saint, but goddamn, was she something awesome? And it was a real bummer, huh? What did you think of Becky?
Yeah, she was one of those classic victims that everyone says was just the sweetest, nicest, not life of the party lit up a room, but was super kind. And, you know, she was a nurse and a great mom, and everyone really liked her.
Yeah. And like, so in high school, one, you see pictures of her. I mean, she's a smoke show. She's gorgeous.
She is.
It's not debatable.
Yes.
Not only that, she was the valedictorian, and she played tennis in college. So not only that, she's good enough at sports to play in college. I mean, look at this package she's bringing to the table.
However, the college was just the local Quincy University, which I've never heard of, and I would guess that anybody outside of that area has never heard of it. So to be the valedictorian, but still just go to like the local school, that seemed weird to me. Why not
Parlay it into...
go somewhere like Chicago or a bigger state school.
She was a homebody, though. I mean, she wanted to stay in town.
So then when they were saying that she met Tim in college and he was like the star football player, I'm like, yeah, but it's not a team that anyone gives a shit about.
I tried to create space.
All he's bringing to the table is that he's supposedly good at football. I mean, you think he's good looking?
He's...
I don't know. I wasn't impressed with this guy.
No, he's fully mid.
Yeah, very mid. And he's got a goatee, just your standard goatee. If you are confident to rock a goatee, it better pull it off, right? Goatees are more often than not misses.
Yes.
You gotta look like Timothy Oliphant to have a goatee.
I was gonna say, who can we use as an example of someone who does a good job with the goatee?
Right there. I think Timothy Oliphant in the new Justified. It's like your standard square little thing. It's not like a fake, like, mustache stubble thing. It's like the full-on box. It looks good on him.
Yeah, well, anything would.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Did you watch that show? Do you party with Justified?
No.
I'm Deputy U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens, and I'm offering salvation.
Becky, smart, hot, good at sports, kind. She's like the whole package.
Yeah, and then she gets pregnant with her first kid, first of three, and she's got a friend that she grew up with, Shannon, that is interviewed on both shows. Actually, Kate, everybody was interviewed on both shows, and 48 Hours actually interviewed Tim.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and they played way more of the Family Feud, and they asked him if he thought, like, he defends that joke on the 48 Hours.
It was supposed to be funny.
Oh, I'm going to defend it too.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't wait to get there because I'm not.
Okay.
I'm going to shit on it.
Okay.
So I can't wait. So she's pregnant with her firstborn, and also her childhood best friend Shannon is also pregnant. Unfortunately, Shannon loses her kid, and the struggle of that, the pain of that loss, inspired Becky to do a complete 180, change careers, and become a nurse. So she goes to nursing school, is valedictorian of that too.
Becky graduated from nursing school at the top of her class. Again.
And they show the clip of her giving that speech. I'm like, I'm getting chills now talking about it. I just, like, my heart goes, like, what a sweet gesture.
Yeah.
Just to hear her be like, my friend, her battle with her son, and like, it inspired me to, I want to help people. So that's what she did.
She did.
I wrote this speech because I wanted my friend to know how much she and her son have affected me, inspired me to be a nurse, and challenged me to be a better person.
And so that's awesome. And of course, I said that Becky and Tim are divorced. They divorced a few years ago. And when they first split, it wasn't rough. But then it became your cliche divorce case with kids.
They were really going after each other.
They both tried to get restraining orders. They both failed.
Yeah. And then Becky also tried to get a restraining order against Tim's dad.
Yes.
Which, now, I wanted to know more about this. There were some accusations against Tim's dad. She accused him of inappropriate behavior with minors and did not want him around their kids.
Correct.
And then Murph says that these were rumors that had been floating around the family for years. Like, everybody knew his dad was up to no good.
Yeah.
And then we don't hear anything else about it.
No, and actually, 48 hours, they were like, they wouldn't specify, but we did some digging. And they pulled up court docs that were like, it was about accusations of him from years ago. I feel like it was like a Stephen Collins situation where he did it in the 70s and he finally got busted or something. Does that make sense?
Seventh heaven.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where I stand with that. I mean, obviously, if they say that he was abusive, I believe it. And I say, keep him away from that guy.
Yes.
If we're talking murder motivation or whatever, like, facts that we can hold as, like, this is a cold hard fact, that doesn't weigh in there. That's more of a thing that just can affect your overall opinion, right? But here's what's wild, is that she makes this decision to go back to school to become a nurse. And this is when the trouble starts in the marriage, Kate. This is when old Tim is like, oh, what about me? And he's all mad because she's spending time with her studies and with her kids. And he didn't step it up and he won't help out one bit.
No, she said that she felt like she was a married single mom.
Yeah, which is a good line.
Yeah.
Becky was a single married mother.
So when the cops come to investigate and they interview the Taylors.
They hop over to the Taylors and they're like, hey, is there anything suspicious? And they go, as a matter of fact, yes, there is.
Several months earlier, they had their car broken into in their driveway. So they bought some security cameras and put them up facing their property, but it also looked over onto a little bit of Becky's, like the driveway and the yard between them.
Yes.
And they noticed that a few times recently, they had seen a prowler walking up their driveway and then kind of over towards Becky's. And then several minutes...
Turning right towards her house.
Yeah. And then several minutes later, they would see him leaving again. And this happened a few times.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah, I mean, it happened at Valentine's Day at 1 a.m. when somebody walks over there. And as Murph Doc points out, remember that little fact. You're going to want to know that, right?
Yeah.
The detectives get their hands on a bunch of different security tapes. And like they say, individually, they can't hold the case. But together, they make a pretty good argument. Right, because they have footage of some guy on a bike riding around town without reflectors. And then they find a burner account on Facebook of Tim's called John Smith, and he was looking at a bike with no reflectors that was then found half a block from his house.
Right, and all of the security camera footage pieced together shows the path that this person was taking on the bike right to Becky's and then leaving again.
Yeah.
And I would also like to talk about the police chief. Did not look like a cop. He didn't have the cop haircut. He had like big swoopy brown hair.
Yeah.
But what he did have was some of the worst analogies I've ever heard on Dateline.
Ah! Worst!
A normal way to say something might be, we're looking for the missing puzzle piece. But this guy had to explain all the different kinds of puzzles there are. Some are for children and only contain a few pieces.
Yeah.
Others are for adults and have thousands of pieces. And I'm like, guy, we get it. It's a puzzle that needs to be solved. And then later, he says solving this case was gonna be like looking for a needle in a stack of needles. Which does not work.
Yeah.
That would mean that it would be easy to solve because any of the needles in the stack of needles would be the needle you're looking for, dingus.
You're right. And even if it wasn't, you could say it was the needle. Like, they're not going to be able to prove it. They're all the same needle, bro. You're right.
They're all needles.
That's funny. I didn't look at it that way. You're right. That does fall apart. But I got to say, I'm on the complete other side. I was going to bring up both of those things that he said, and I was going to applaud him for it. Because I thought it was great. Because he's right. Cases could be, it's a puzzle of some kind. Whether it's a 4-piece puzzle for 2-year-olds or a 2,000-piece puzzle where you don't have the box to look at the picture. That's pretty good.
Yes, but the way you said it just now was far more succinct. Play the clip of him.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy isn't going
to
stop.
It's always a puzzle. It may be a puzzle that you buy for a 2-year-old that has 4 pieces to it. Or in certain investigations, it could be a 2,000-piece jigsaw puzzle where 25% of the pieces are missing and you don't have the box to look at the picture to see what it's supposed to be when you're finished anyway.
I like any time we get a variation of needle in a haystack. because just like when they talk about lit up like a Christmas tree with luminol, I hear the needle in a haystack metaphor turned and twisted in true crime shows all the time.
The metaphor works as is.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be cute.
Yeah. They want their own spin. It's like, no. Metaphors are metaphors for a reason. The first one does the job.
Yeah.
Tim's divorce attorney, Casey Schnock, would become his defense attorney.
Okay, I feel bad for Tim's lawyer, and it's because she was wearing earrings that were very popular in, like, 2019, and she's gonna regret that choice in years to come.
Yeah, big time. I thought they looked like tuning forks.
She says that because there's no gun found, it's circumstantial. So just some random man came into Tim's house and took his bullets and then shot Becky with them and then returned them. Yeah, right.
He also did some stupid Googling. How to remove gunpowder. How to crowbar a window open.
He is searching things like how to make a homemade silencer.
Oh, you're kidding.
And how did Tim make his homemade silencer, Kate?
With a plastic bag and what was found at the scene. Scraps of plastic bags, and they were also found at his house. It also explains why the Taylors didn't hear 14 gunshots that night, because they were silenced.
Police found this crowbar in Tim's basement.
And then he also Googled how to look up a Missouri state license plate, because Becky's new boyfriend had Missouri plates. And he, I think, wanted to find that dude's address so he could go kill him.
February 14th was the very same night the boyfriend told police he had stayed over at Becky's.
Another example of, like, I don't want to be married to you, but you're not allowed to date someone else. So dumb.
The one hook this episode has was the fact that Tim and his family were on Family Feud in 2019.
What's the biggest mistake you made at your wedding?
Honey, I love you, but said I do.
Just like the Zombie Hunter thing, this was the promo thing. Like, I hadn't seen this app, and Mom Money's like, the Family Feud guy, bah, bah, bah. And I'm like, Mom, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, and just like the Zombie Hunter thing, I feel like this was not the big deal that they were trying to make it out to be.
Okay, I feel like it fits contextually a little bit more than Zombie Hunter, only because the joke is directly about his wife, who he went on to murder.
Yes.
I feel like context-wise, it's good it's in here, but I want to hear your defense of what he said on Family Feud.
I'm not sure that the Dateline producers or Becky's friends and family members actually know the rules of Family Feud. Because yeah. Tim had to guess what most people would say they regret about their wedding. Not what he regrets.
Right.
That's how the game is played. So when he guesses that people might regret saying I do, and then before that he says, I'm sorry, honey, which implies I don't feel this way.
I think it implies directly he does feel that way. He didn't have to say the I'm sorry, honey. I hear what you're saying. He's playing the game correctly. And actually, in 48 hours, guess what was on the board in the number two spot with second most popular?
I do?
Yep, saying I do. It was on the board. So obviously, it was okay.
It was the second most popular answer on the board.
I do.
Yeah, so I don't understand why this was even a big deal. He's just playing the game the way it's supposed to be played. But then they're saying how everyone watching was like, oh, that's a personal shot. No, it isn't. It's number two on the board.
But what about the I'm sorry, honey? Doesn't that make you think he is thinking about his wife?
No.
I'm not saying to condemn this man. I'm saying if I was this guy's wife at home, I'd be like, why'd you have to preface that? You're playing Family Feud, I know.
Not my mistake. I love my wife.
Okay, fine. Let's say it's okay. Guess what I don't think it is? Drop dead hysterical. And I don't think the audience did either. Murph Dog and Everybody Loves to Talk, like, they got such a pop from that joke. And he sets it up. You can tell when he's winding this up, he thinks he's the smartest motherfucker in the room. Hey, Tim, sorry, bud, but there's a team of writers behind Family Feud that specifically write setups so that you say stupid innuendos and stupid answers like you did. Do you know what I mean? The writers set up this shit on Family Feud to happen for Pun Central, right?
Sure.
Which is fine. I don't know. I just hate this guy. I hate the implication that it was a huge laugh, because it was not. It was not.
Honey, I love you, but said I do.
No. Also, Tim's dad was there.
My God, you're right. Oh, hey, Family Feud. You don't vet your guests? Is that what's going on?
Also, they had some shots of him that they could have shown when they were talking about his accusations, but they didn't show him at all.
Yeah, this is where Kate, I'm almost, for a split second there, I debated even telling you that they showed multiple photos of him on 48 Hours, and I know exactly what he looks like.
Huh.
The dad, yeah. And they showed something else. They had actual cell phone video that Tim recorded during one of their spats at a parent-teacher conference, where they were having an argument in a hallway and Tim did the thing where he's shoving his phone in her face and saying, like, I'm recording you. And she's like, put it away.
Stop. The letter.
I'm asking you to stop harassing me and stop
calling me. I'm not harassing you. I'm asking
He offered this video of the incident as proof.
We'll make a copy for you.
I don't want you to tape me.
Then
don't
stop doing this.
Don't tape me. I don't.
Then stop doing this.
I don't know what proof he is hoping is in this video recording that he clearly wanted the 48 Hours producers to have.
It's almost like it makes him seem guiltier.
Yeah, I agree. The 48 Hours is good for him to put his foot in his mouth because he said a few things that are just like, dude, I mean, I guess it's good you didn't testify because you would have sunk yourself, you dumb shit.
I can't even fathom the idea of considering murdering somebody. Like, I can't.
Aaron Moreira is really giving him a hard time about, like, you know, what about all these abusive texts that we have? They also read and showed proof of texts, and they showed the Googles, and they showed how misspelled it was. So you know he wrote that in a f***ing flurry, too. It was, like, wildly misspelled.
Or that he's really stupid.
Yep, yep. So they're asking Tim, they're like, you know, her friends and family say that she was afraid of you. Like, just basically saying that he was the aggressor. And he goes, no, that's not true.
She wasn't the one that was emotionally abused.
And he basically says, like, I'm the one who should have sympathy here because she was, like, rough to me. Like, he's like, I tried to stay out of her way.
Right. By stalking her and then trying to kill her and then killing her. And his lawyer, too.
Yeah.
Kept making it clear that they were both aggressive and they both said things they regretted and
right.
That they both had restraining order things. And it was like, yeah, one is not like the other.
Yeah. There were so many things that she was offering up that did not work. Like, for instance, the burner account. She said, I have a burner account. Everybody has a burner account. No, they don't.
I mean, I have a fake Facebook account. I'm not proud of it, but people do it.
I mean, maybe she does because she's a prosecutor, but, like, I'm not offering that up on TV, lady.
You know, I don't have one, but I actually thought of maybe getting one once I saw that there was an app coming out that could tell you who viewed your posts.
Is there such a thing?
I don't know that it exists yet, but I feel like I saw something about that, and then I thought, I should probably have a burner for when I'm going deep into people's Instagram accounts. And
I don't want to know that info, though. Do you want to know who? I mean, I get that in stories.
No,
it's depressing.
I don't care about who's looking at my stuff, but I don't want to show up in someone else's.
Ah.
Like, I go deep into people's and I don't want them knowing I'm in there.
I can honestly say I don't do the deep dive digging on people online because I'm so mortified of accidentally hitting like.
Yeah.
Because I've got countless personal stories that I'm not going to recount even one of them right now where it's like the worst thing that could be the most awkward to happened times five to me in the past. So it's like I know the second I go back to any crush, like back 1 year in an Instagram, it's going to be like double like, unlike, like. Anyway. Okay, so wait, I got some more stuff. Is there anything that you have?
No, that's it for me.
So what do you call evidence like that when it's thrown up against you?
Circumstantial at best.
You can call the evidence whatever you want. It's beyond a reasonable doubt that this motherfucker did it, right? He's found guilty, as he should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, this lawyer, she said one thing. Here we go. So she's going, that's circumstantial. You can't prove that that crowbar did that opening on that window. That's what she's saying. She goes, you can't prove that. And I'd go, yes, but you can prove that a crowbar did it. So that's just one little factoid. And then they go to her, okay, well, what about facts? The expert's opinion state that the DNA found under Becky's fingernails was three times as likely to belong to Tim or one of Tim's male relatives. So that could mean, like, his sons, right?
Or his dad.
That's the lawyer's argument. Yeah, or his dad. But I'm not sure if Dateline talked about DNA under the fingernails. I mean,
they did not, because I didn't hear that.
That was three times more likely to have come from the defendant or a male relative from the lineage of the defendant.
Now, look, I mean, when you hear a DNA fact and that the multiplier is only three, you know it's not good because it's usually like a number like 460 quintillion.
Sure. The odds of this being a match
are one in three. So I don't know. I mean, you push all this together, the silencer, the looking up the plate, the footage. Like, you can't tell who's on the security footage, but the stuff where the guy's walking by, you could do a little silhouette walk by with Tim.
Yes. And I also thought it was very interesting how throughout at least the first part of this episode, Murph really wanted us to think that this prowler could have been a man or a woman. He kept saying a man or woman or he or she. And I'm looking at this silhouette, and there's no way that's a woman.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's clearly a dude.
Yeah.
Look, hey, maybe he's just being extra safe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
Trying to throw us off the scent by hinting that it could be a woman, but then never bringing up any suspect other than Tim.
We do see a picture of her new boyfriend. I think he's a stud, and I think that's what pissed him off. He was a f***ing straight up stud.
That dude was a stud. He was hot.
He was hot. I think that's what set Tim off, is that this motherfucker's way hotter than me. He's parked in my driveway, in my wife.
He's parked in my wife.
It's telling because that boyfriend was over there these nights where he had been seen on the camera walking over. So it's just all this put together here clearly f***ing did it.
Yeah.
The sister had a theory within hours of the murder, before Tim has been notified that his ex-wife is dead, he's bringing over a kid's basketball hoop to his dad's house. And the sister is like, it's clear that Becky didn't want the kids around that guy. So when would Tim be confident enough to bring a kid's hoop over if he knew that the wife was dead and she couldn't say, hey, my kids won't be around your dad now? What do you think?
That is an interesting theory. I believe it.
Yeah. It's way too vague and thin to put towards the top of the list, but it's just one more little fact where it's like, yeah, throw it on the pile, dude. Throw it on.
And he wasted no time at all.
I was going to give the all-star to Becky because of how awesome she was. And I do give the all-star to victims sometimes because Nancy was one of the very first all-stars, okay?
Because I'd been shot in the head.
But I'm going to give it to her sister because of the f***ing stunner of a line in her family's victim statement, right?
Uh-huh.
From the family, is she had this line. Like, so Tim thinks he's hot shit because he made the clear, like, lob joke over the plate about how, like, saying I do is the mistake I make at my weddings, right? And he thinks he's so funny and clever. This is what Becky's sister said to Tim in court.
Maybe you should have Googled childhood PTSD in between your internet searches for homemade silencers and VIN numbers.
That's pretty good, right?
Zing.
Yeah. When the judge read the verdict, he counted all 14 shots. How do you feel about that, Caitlin?
He did?
Yeah, he said 1, 2, and he counted all the way to 14, and it was kind of long, and you could tell he kind of got lost in it, because you can feel him about to say 15, and he's like, step on the brakes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 times.
That wasn't on the dayline.
Nah. It wasn't. It was in 48 hours. I mean, look, I feel like it's good for me to watch 48 hours when they do the same one for additional info. Don't you agree?
I do.
And look, those things that Dateline didn't have that they had, like, it sounds like, again, I'm on Dateline, but aesthetically and storytelling wise, the Dateline episode was far superior. Like, if you watch the 48 hours, you could tell that they zoomed in on footage to cover and edit and stuff. And it was like, oh my, like, you're always pointing out stuff that looks like SD and shit. Watch the 48 hours on this and you'll be like, this is SD footage that they zoomed in on. This was not shot a month ago.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that brings us to our list. Kate, can you just give a quick summary of your list? For any new listeners out there.
Kate's unnamed list. Is it a small town? The kind of town where things like this just don't happen. It is. It's Quincy, yep. Illinois. It's a safe small town on the banks of the mighty Mississippi.
Yep.
An apple pie slice of Midwestern Americana.
Is there a Florida connection? Nope. No Florida. No one went to Florida. No one was hiding in Florida. No one was from Florida. Was anybody in the military? No. Nobody.
Nope. Nobody.
Did anyone start crying and then apologize for crying? No.
No.
There were some close calls, but no.
Didn't happen. Is that all you got?
That's all I got.
All right, well, that brings us to Kurt's Kick-Ass List.
Kick-Ass List.
A little recap on my stuff. The big one is, number one, does anybody in the episode say signs of a struggle? Or something very, 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 very close to that? Because that's what they say in The Burbs, and The Burbs is dope.
Signs of a struggle here.
Nobody in this said that, although, as we discussed, they did almost say it a lot.
And there were bullet holes in her hands.
Number two, does anybody say, this is like a bad movie, when they're describing, like, the bad stuff that happens? No, that is also something that happens a lot. Did not happen on this one.
No.
Also, does anybody mention the show Dateline as in, like, offer it proof of knowing how the law works? Like, yeah, I know. I watch Dateline. Happens a lot. Didn't happen tonight, though, unfortunately. Also, when we're talking cell phones, if a detective or anybody says, and, you know, this was before the age of cell phones, when we're talking about a murder that's, like, in the 80s, like, duh, dude, we know. You don't need to qualify it. We know they didn't have an iPhone in 78, right? Like, duh. So that's on that list. And I think there's one more. I'm forgetting it right now at the moment. But anyway, those are our lists.
See, that was my thing. I think I've missed one.
I mean, I said we should write them down. I didn't do it. We don't have to do that again for like 5 or 10 episodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got what you're saying, yeah.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Join us next Wednesday, where we will be talking about the episode, The Case of the Man with No Name.
Get 3 coffins ready.
Which I have watched, and I'm actually super stoked to talk about with you, Caitline.
Great.
So.
Can't wait.
Have you watched it yet?
No.
Okay, I'm pretty stoked, and text me when you do. I'm Kurt Money.
I'm Caitline.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.
Always bet on Blart.